Ikatra Podcast Conversations for the Curious Essential Knowledge, Simplified, your gateway to essential ideas that matter most. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of Ikatra AI. Welcome back to the deep dive. You know, just think about all the digital breadcrumbs we leave behind every day. Our health data, what we search for, where we go. I mean, the data is definitely being collected, right?
Oh, absolutely. It's not if, it's how. And we're kind of at this breaking point because the old methods for privacy, things like just, you know, stripping out names.
Anonymization.
Exactly. Anonymization is just fundamentally broken. We know this now. It gives this like massive false sense of security. We really need something new, something mathematically sound.
Okay. So that's where today's book comes in. Differential Privacy by Simpson L. Garfinkel. We're going to try and give you a shortcut, basically, to understanding this.
Well, it's a pretty rigorous framework.
Mm-hmm.
The goal is to figure out how organizations can learn useful things from all that data, those big trends, without actually compromising anyone's individual privacy. Like, what's the new gold standard? And Garfinkel is really the person to talk about that standard. He's got the academic chops, a PhD in computer science from MIT.
Right.
But what makes his view so valuable, I think, is the real-world experience, high-level stuff in government and industry.
Yeah, this is where it gets really interesting. He wasn't just studying this from afar. He was actually the senior computer scientist for confidentiality and data access at the U.S. Census Bureau.
Which is huge, because he wasn't just writing papers. He was one of the main architects behind the system they used for the 2020 census.
Wow. Okay, so that's not theory. That's
practice. High-stakes practice. We're talking about the sensitive data of, what, 330 million Americans?
Yeah, that puts it in perspective. It means he actually had to grapple with that tension, that trade-off between getting useful statistics and protecting every single person.
Exactly. He lived the privacy-utility trade-off, as he calls it. He had to build something that worked, that resisted attacks, but still gave policymakers the data they needed.
Mm-hmm.
He gets the theory and the messy reality.
Okay, so the book itself, where does it start?
Well, it starts by basically tearing down the old way.
Yeah.
The whole idea of anonymization. Chapter one is all about why just removing names and addresses, that kind of thing, is just, well, it's dangerously naive.
Right, because of these re-identification attacks.
Yeah.
Where people take supposedly anonymous data and match it up with other public info.
Precisely. He gives some classic, frankly, scary examples. Remember the Massachusetts GIC case back in the 90s?
Vaguely.
Yeah.
Health records, right?
Yeah, anonymized health records.
Yeah.
But then LaTanya Sweeney, who was a grad student then, showed she could find the governor's record just by linking zip code, birth date, and gender with public voter lists.
Oof. Okay.
And it's not just old news. Think about the Netflix prize. They released millions of movie ratings, all anonymous, supposedly.
I remember that.
Weeks later, researchers figured out who was who by matching the Netflix ratings pattern with reviews people had publicly posted on IMDb.
Okay, so the lesson is if there's any other data out there someone can link it to.
Your anonymization is basically worthless. It just hasn't been re-identified yet.
So if protecting the raw data itself is a lost cause, what's the alternative?
That's the pivot to differential privacy, or DP. The focus shifts completely. Instead of trying to make the data anonymous, you make the output of your analysis safe.
The output, like the final statistic or result.
Exactly. The core promise, they call it the indistinguishability guarantee, is that someone looking at the results can't tell if your specific data was included in the calculation or not. Your presence or absence makes almost no difference to the outcome.
Hmm. That is a big shift. It's not about hiding the data points, but about blurring the contribution of any single point.
Right. It becomes a mathematical property of the analysis itself, not just a hope that nobody can link the data back. It's provable. It's designed to be future-proof against attacks we haven't even thought of yet.
Okay. So how do you control this? How do you make it work? You mentioned parameters.
Yeah. Chapter two gets into the key knobs you can turn. The big one is Epsilon. Think of it as your privacy budget.
Budget. Like, you only have so much privacy spending you can do.
Sort of. A smaller epsilon means stronger privacy, less information leakage. But the trade-off is you have to add more noise, so your results are less accurate.
And a larger epsilon.
More accuracy, but weaker privacy protection. Choosing epsilon is where the math meets policy, meets ethics, really. You're deciding how much potential harm you risk for how much utility.
Okay, epsilon is the budget. What's the other knob?
That's delta. It's basically the probability, usually incredibly tiny, that the epsilon guarantee might fail. You typically set delta to something astronomically small, like 1 in a trillion. So you can essentially ignore it for most practical purposes, but mathematically, it's there.
Got it. Epsilon is the main trade-off dial. So now we have the budget. How do we actually add the privacy? What are the tools? Chapter three.
Yep, chapter three is the how-to. It starts with a concept called sensitivity. Before you add noise, you need to know how much impact one person's data could have on the result.
Okay, how does that work?
Sensitivity measures the maximum possible change to a query's output if you add or remove just one individual's data. So, like for a simple count query, how many people did X, the sensitivity is one. Adding or removing one person changes the count by exactly one.
Makes sense. So sensitivity tells you how much you need to blur the result.
Exactly. Once you know the sensitivity, you use specific mathematical tools, mechanisms, to add carefully calibrated noise. The amount of noise depends on the sensitivity in your chosen epsilon, your budget.
And the main tool for numbers is.
The Laplace mechanism. It's the workhorse for things like counts, sums, averages. It adds random noise drawn from a specific shape of Laplace distribution. It's clever because the noise is enough to mask any single person, but over large numbers, the underlying trend still comes through.
Okay, so the place for numbers. What if the answer isn't a number? Like, what's the most popular choice?
Good question. For that, you often use the exponential mechanism. It's designed for choosing an item from a set. It works by assigning scores to each possible answer and then picking one, but probabilistically. It's more likely to pick the best answer, but there's always a chance it picks a slightly less optimal one, which preserves privacy.
Right, introduces just enough randomness. Okay, so we have the theory, the budget, the tools. How does this look in practice? Like, who adds the noise and when?
Chapter 5 covers the two main ways this gets deployed, the architectures. It really depends on who you trust.
Okay.
First is central differential privacy. This is what the Census Bureau does. A central, trusted organization collects all the raw sensitive data first. Then, before they release any statistics, they apply the noise.
So high accuracy because they have the real data to start with.
But you have to trust that central curator completely. They see everything.
And the alternative.
Local differential privacy. This is more like what Apple or Google use for things like figuring out popular keyboard emojis or common misspellings in search. The noise gets added on your device before your data ever leaves it.
Ah, so the company never sees your raw individual data.
Correct. The privacy guarantee is much stronger in that sense. But the flip side is that each individual piece of data is much noisier. So you need a huge number of users for the aggregate trends to become clear. Lower accuracy generally, but less trust required.
That makes sense. Central needs trust, local needs scale. So going back to that epsilon budget, you mentioned it's finite. Why is that so critical?
Chapter four, right?
Yeah, the privacy budget concept is fundamental. Think about it. Even if each individual query you run is differentially private, if you let someone ask millions and millions of slightly different questions.
They could eventually piece together the original information, like death by a thousand cuts. Exactly, the death by a thousand cuts attack. So DP includes composition theorems. These are mathematical rules that strictly track how your total privacy budget, your epsilon, gets used up with every single query you run.
So you can't just keep asking questions forever.
Nope. Every query spends some of the budget. Once the budget's gone, you can't ask any more questions about that data set. It forces data analysts to be really disciplined and prioritize the most important questions. It puts a hard stop on fishing expeditions.
Okay, that's a lot of technical detail. If we zoom out, what are the big picture takeaways, the core messages?
I think there are maybe four key themes that really reshape how we should think about data.
Okay, theme one.
Theme one, anonymization is dead. Seriously. We just have to let go of the idea that stripping out names is enough. It's a failed paradigm. If someone says data is anonymous, you should immediately ask, okay, but what other data could be linked to it?
Right. Assume it's vulnerable. What's next?
Theme two, privacy is now a formal mathematical guarantee. This is the big leap. It's moving away from vague promises or policies, we will misuse your data, to something precise, provable, auditable. It's based on math, not just trust.
Okay, so it's quantifiable. Theme three.
Theme three. The privacy utility trade-off is explicitly managed. DP doesn't make the trade-off disappear. You still can't have perfect privacy and perfect accuracy, but it forces you to confront it head-on using that privacy budget. Organizations have to decide how much accuracy they're willing to sacrifice. No more hand-waving.
That feels important for accountability. And the last one.
Theme four, it protects individuals, not just the data set. The whole point is to make any single person's contribution statistically invisible in the final output. You learn about the forest, the overall patterns, without revealing anything identifiable about any specific tree.
The book must have some lines that really stick with you, summarizing these ideas.
Oh, definitely. One that really nails the critique of the old way is something like, "The belief that privacy can be achieved by simply removing names and addresses is a dangerous fiction. Anonymized is simply a synonym for not yet re-identify." Pow.
Yeah, that's pretty blunt. And what about defining DP itself?
There's a great line capturing the core idea. "Differential privacy is not about making data anonymous. It's about making the presence or absence of any individual in the data set provably undetectable." It's about that statistical indistinguishability.
Undetectable. I like that.
And maybe my favorite, because it connects the tech to the real world. A privacy budget, epsilon, is not merely a technical parameter. It is a policy decision that quantifies the fundamental trade-off between individual privacy and societal utility. Choosing epsilon is where mathematics meets ethics.
Ah, putting the responsibility squarely on the decision makers. So how does this actually play out for different people? What are the real life applications?
Well, for the ordinary citizen, it means you can be a smarter consumer of tech. When a company like Apple says they use DP, you have a better sense of what that actually means. They're aiming to learn about group trends, not your specific actions. It's a stronger promise than just trust us.
Okay. What about the tech folks, the engineers building stuff?
For engineers and data scientists, it's becoming a practical tool. There are open source libraries. Now Google has one, Microsoft has Smart Noise. You can actually build DP into systems from the ground up, manage the budget, calculate sensitivity. It's becoming part of the standard toolkit for responsible data handling.
So it's moving from academia into actual code.
Definitely. And for business leaders and policymakers, DP offers a way forward. It can be a competitive advantage, demonstrating real privacy commitment builds trust. And it provides a kind of technical safe harbor to help navigate complex regulations like GDPR or CCPA, because you have a mathematical basis for your privacy claims.
So, wrapping up, what's the one big thing you took away from this? The most surprising or valuable lesson?
For me, it's that fundamental shift. Privacy in this data-drenched age has to be algorithmic and provable. It can't just be about procedures and hoping for the best anymore. Stop thinking about just redacting PII. Start thinking about the mathematical guarantees of the questions you're asking.
Yeah, moving from hope to math, what's a final thought to leave people with?
I'd say differential privacy is incredibly powerful, probably the best framework we have right now, but it's not magic. Implementing it well means really understanding its limits. That utility trade-off is real, and you have to be careful you don't accidentally introduce biases or make it impossible to study small, important subgroups when you add noise. That choice of epsilon. It's not just a technical setting, it's an ongoing ethical judgment call.
See you next time with another remarkable thinker, another powerful book, and another idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Accotra Foundation.